You're coming here, learning drama, meditating. Just to see me meditating makes me very, very happy. And here are a few things that I want to talk about before I continue my discussion on meditation practice. Here's something very important. If you want to be joyous, then of course you want to be joyous. If you want to be joyous, satisfied. That's also, we want to be satisfied. We are looking for satisfaction. Trying to look for satisfaction all of our life. And if you really ask, have I found anything really satisfying, lasting, which gives me lasting satisfaction? Most of us will say, no. You do one thing after another. You feel satisfied for a brief period of time, maybe a few hours, maybe a few days. And after that, that satisfaction is gone. So, if you want to be joyous, satisfied, and fulfilled, that's the most difficult thing to do, to be fulfilled, to be full, to be filled, not wanting anymore, not lacking anything anymore. You feel empty. To be fulfilled is the opposite of feeling empty. Fulfilled is full and filled. It is full. So to feel full, to be satisfied. Be in touch with your spiritual part of yourself. Don't go and look for something out there to make you feel fulfilled. We need many things to survive, to live, to be healthy. But to feel fulfilled, don't go out and look for things there. There's nothing there to make you feel fulfilled. Only thing that can make you feel fulfilled is to get deeply in touch with your spiritual nature. Very noble nature, very beautiful nature. So we human beings have two different natures, so to speak. Lower nature and higher nature. And if you study Abhidharma, you'll find that we have two different categories for the mental factors. One is beautiful. Another is, to use the opposite of that, it's not beautiful. Both of us, we have both those qualities. Like say, selfishness is not beautiful. But generosity is very beautiful. Hurting other beings is not beautiful. Restraint is very beautiful. Unmindfulness is not beautiful. If you look into your mind, you'll see that. When you are unmindful, the mind is very agitated, going here and there. It's like a hobo. I don't know what it means. It's like a homeless person, going around, not going nowhere, living here and there, doing things that are not healthy. So when the mind is not mindful, it is just like a homeless person. Feel very insecure, very unhappy. When you are mindful, then you are at home. You feel really at home. So mindfulness is my home. When you are mindful, then you are at home. When you are not mindful, then you are on the road, going nowhere. So get in touch with the spiritual part of yourself, the beautiful part of yourself. Be mindful. Here's one encouraging thing is, if you want something badly enough, I really want it, I can't be without it. So if you want something badly enough, there's a way to get it. So, which means that if you really want to be mindful, there's a way to do it. It's not difficult. If you really want to be mindful. We need to make very clear about our object, our goal. We really want to be mindful. Because unless we become mindful more and more, there is no way to feel happy, joyous, fulfilled. The world is a place for opportunity. Yes, it's an opportunity to be here, to be in this human world. As a human being, it's an opportunity. So when I read some of the stories about bodhisattvas, I found that bodhisattvas don't want to live in a place which is perfect. You don't want to be in a place which is perfect. Why is that? I think it's quite easy to guess. Why don't they want to live in a place which is perfect? You have nothing to learn. Everything is perfect. You have nothing to learn. So deliberately, they go to places where they feel they face difficulties. So when I read about Buddha and one of his cousin brother who gave him a lot of trouble, who was that? Who was that? Pardon? Devadatta, yes, Devadatta. Devadatta gave a lot of trouble to Buddha. And I'm very grateful toward Devadatta just for doing that. It might sound very paradoxical. Why is that? Because of Devadatta, we know more about the good qualities of the Buddha. Otherwise, how do we know? So in some ways, he make it possible for Buddha to manifest and show his perfection. So this world is a very good place to learn, because so many difficulties, imperfections. So the world is a place for opportunity, and I look forward to the opportunities for learning and growing. So every difficulty is an opportunity for learning and for growing. If you really understand this one thing, you'll never feel that your life is meaningless, no matter what happens. Whether things are going well or whether things are going bad, you can always learn something and grow. And actually, we learn and grow more when we face difficulties and overcome those difficulties properly, in a proper way. If we react to difficulties and make more unwholesome actions, then we don't learn, we don't grow. So difficulties are opportunities to learn and to grow, to become a better person. So if you see your life as a long learning process, then nothing happens in your life will be meaningless. Everything will be meaningful. Everything you can feel that it is meaningful. I've learned something. That's what we are doing here, to be mindful all the time, all day, seeing, hearing many things, and our mind reacting. Just from watching the way our mind reacts to all these experiences, by just doing that, we learn and we grow. Start thinking about yourself as a lifetime student at a large university. A lifetime student at a large university. I'm thinking of giving a talk on that. A big, long talk for about an hour and a half. So start thinking about yourself as a lifetime student at a large university. Your curriculum is your total relationship with the world you live in. That's your curriculum. Your total relationship with the world you live in, from the moment you're born to the moment you die. So it's an informal school. Each experiment is a valuable lesson to be learned. Each experience also is a valuable lesson to be learned. The trick is simply to make whatever place you are in your educational forum and learn everything you can about yourself and the world around you. Actually, this is true education. To learn about yourself and to learn the world around you and the relationship, you and the world. And the world includes everything, all living and non-living, everything. So Learning about yourself and learning about the world around you and your relationship with the world is the highest education. Now I would like to continue my discussion about meditation from last week. So now we know that our object of meditation is pramatha, which is the natural quality of mental and physical phenomena. So let's take, for example, seeing. So everybody has eyes, so everybody sees, but a meditator sees things very differently. So what do you do when you meditate awareness of seeing? So you look at something, and you are totally in touch with that without thinking about it. So this is very important, without thinking about it. Thinking is not vipassana. It could be samatha. So be very clear about these two things. Some people read about meditation and they say, when you meditate, you think about something. Yes, this is one type of meditation, which is samatha. Like metta bhavana, you think about people and you think of your loving thoughts. And Buddha Anusati Bhavana also, you think about Buddha. You think about the qualities of the Buddha, and when you get absorbed in the quality of the Buddha, your mind automatically is in that quality. It has that quality somehow, to a certain extent. So you think about it. And even with metta, sometimes when you develop metta and you get used to doing that, sometimes even though you don't think about anybody or any thoughts, you feel some sort of feeling of love. You can get into that state. That's a kind of higher state of metta, actually. You don't think about it anymore, but you feel it. You feel very warm and kind and soft, open, generous. So there is a kind of meditation where in which you think. And there's another kind of meditation when you practice it, you don't think. And vipassana is not thinking. But we are so used to thinking that even when we are practicing vipassana, in between, thoughts come in again and again. Even about vipassana. Or about something else also. But even about practicing vipassana, we have thoughts coming in again and again. We comment on our experience. So there is something in our mind which likes to comment. A commentator. Like when you watch news, items, news in the movie or in television, there's somebody talking, explaining what's happening. So it's like that in our mind. Our mind is always explaining things. Oh, this is that, this is good, that is bad. So a commentator is always commenting in our mind. When you're meditating and things are going well, the thought comes, oh, it's so nice now. Things are going so well. So, when you meditate, we need to know that we don't need to think. It will come, but don't encourage thinking. No matter how beautiful, sometimes when I was a beginner meditating, such beautiful thoughts coming in my mind, one thing after another, with very beautiful connections, very interesting connections. I get so attached to these Dhamma thoughts that I can't let it go. I love it, I want to have it, I want to remember these thoughts. But that became a big hindrance. So when we meditated together, many of my friends who are not so intellectual, who don't read many books, they don't read Sambhadhamma books, but they don't read much of any other subjects. So they don't think so much. And especially when I was young, I wanted to write articles. Thoughtful articles, good articles, Dharma articles. So because of that ambition or aspiration also, when I meditate, beautiful Dharma thoughts coming in my mind. I can't let it go. I want to write down. And for that reason, it took me much, much longer than most of my friends who were not very well educated, who were not intellectuals. They develop deep personality and they get in touch with the reality very quickly and develop very deep samadhi. And I felt very ashamed sometimes. These people who have no education and they are doing better than me. You see competition coming in the mind. He's doing better. I'm not doing better. Not doing as well. And then we went to our teacher, and our teacher asked me, how is your meditation? I said, nothing very special, but I feel happy. I don't have anything to say, yet, apart from feeling a little bit happier. But once a very simple and clear insight came to my mind, which is that I was always afraid of something. My mind became very calm and peaceful for a few moments, and after that I remember, I've never felt this peace in my life before. It was not deep insight, it's not any kind of jnana actually, it was just calmness, mindfulness, totally mindful and calm, and very much at ease, not thinking of anything, not thinking about the future, not thinking about the past, but right in the moment, very calm and peaceful for a few moments only. And when I came out of that state, I know that I never felt this peace before. And all my life, I was afraid of something. I was afraid of not being a success, not becoming a successful person, not loving, not being loved. Many and many fear. Sometimes it's very vague. You can't really talk about it, but you feel it. You're carrying fear. So anyway, when we meditate, we don't think. When thoughts come, we just acknowledge the thought and let it go. Later, when we practice another type of vipassana, which is citta vipassana, we get deeper into these matters. But for the beginner, don't follow thoughts, because if you follow thoughts, you will not end, you will go on and on. So for example, when we are seeing something, what do we really see? We see only colors. And this color is the reaction of our retina to explain it scientifically. So from the medical point of view, we have a few doctors here. So it's the reaction of our retina, which our brain interprets as color. So what is that that come into and strike the retina? What is that? That is rupa. Rupa is not out there. We don't know what is really there actually. When we see, it is something happening in our eye. And also in our brain, in our mind, they are all connected together. So it's photon with different energy, different frequency, which our nervous system reacts differently and produce different intensity of electrical impulses. And that creates color. So those who are colorblind, although you show them different colors, they don't see all the colors. They see only a few shades of colors. So the colors are there, so to speak, but they don't experience color. So what we mean by color, or what we mean by seeing, is our experience. Not something out there. So try, if you can understand this idea. What we see is our experience only. We don't really see something out there. There might be something there, there is something there, which is the basis for our experience, but we don't really know what that is. So we experience something falling on our retina, and there's a reaction. And the retina produces some impulse, and the nerves carry that into the brain, and in the brain, and connected with the mind also, very difficult to explain about these things, we interpret that. So when we see that, when we say that I see a human being, that's an interpretation of our mind, but not of our eye. The eye does not know anything beyond colors. So when Buddha said deti, deta matam vaitati, which is a very concise meditation instruction, when seeing, only seeing. There's only seeing, nothing added, no interpretation. So when we meditate, that's what we try to do. We try to be aware of what we see. And in the beginning, thoughts going on, oh, this is beautiful, this is nice. And after a while, you watch these thoughts coming, After a while, they slow down, and they stop. So when you stop thinking, in the beginning, you don't feel like you are experiencing anything. The experience becomes very vague without thoughts. It becomes very, very vague. It becomes meaningless. And actually, it is meaningless. We create meaning. And in a certain level, it's important for us to create meaning. But when we are meditating vipassana, we are trying to experience something which is beyond normal experience. Not normal reality, it's beyond normal. Natural, but not normal. So, supernormal may be a better word, I don't know exactly. So we create meaning, we interpret, and we understand our own interpretation actually. When we understand something, it's our own interpretation. So we agree with our interpretation with many people. You interpret something in a certain way, and I interpret something in a certain way, and we have agreement there, and we think that, yes, this is it. But actually, it's agreement of interpretation. We don't really know what's out there. We agree on interpretation. So when we meditate, we become very simple. The mind becomes very, very simple. So thinking is very complicated. Without thinking, experiences, sense inputs become very, very simple. So we go down to that simple level. So we just look at something without thinking about it. So if I do that like this, without thinking, when thinking stops, I'm aware of what I see, which is only colors and patterns. And even the pattern is a kind of put together. And I don't think about carpet anymore. Then there's no carpet anymore. There's only what I see. It's only color, different colors. No carpet anymore. So when you get to that level, then you're in touch with Pramatta. So for a beginner, it's not so easy to do. And also, when we see something, we are aware of the object, so to speak, coming to the eye. And also, when you stop thinking and become more and more aware of it, then you become aware of this awareness, which is aware of this object. There's something which knows that something is there. So you become aware of awareness. This is very important. Then only the process becomes complete. The object, you are aware of the object, and you are aware of the awareness of the object. Two things going on. So you look at this, you're aware of the object, and you know that this kind of consciousness, which is aware of this object. So this will happen slowly. This is what we are trying to do. So for a beginner, when you see something, and immediately your mind starts to interpret it. Oh, this is nice. I like this. This is beautiful. It could be a painting, or an apple, or it could be a car, could be a man or a woman, anything. Immediately you see that, you interpret that. This is good. This is, I like this. So what do you do when that happens? You don't get upset. Immediately when the thought comes, you are aware of that thought. This is liking. And when you don't like something, when the thought comes, oh, I don't like it, this is terrible, horrible. And immediately aware of that thought. Not liking, aversion, disappointment. So it goes on like this. It will go on for a long time. You interpret, you react. You interpret, you react. But if you stop reinterpreting, you don't react anymore. So keep doing that for a long time until you stop reacting and interpreting. Then you see that there's only the object and there's only the awareness. And after a while you see that because of this object, this awareness happens. You shut your eyes. You are aware of something else. You can see some sort of vague images in your eyes, but you're not aware of whatever is out there. Although your memory tells me that there are still a lot of people sitting there, about 60 people sitting there. But that's your memory telling you. When you shut your eyes, you're not aware of that object anymore. You open, suddenly there's awareness. So this awareness is conditioned by this object. This object is awareness. And also, when you turn around, you can see that because of this awareness, awareness of the object happens. Because without this awareness, you cannot see that there is an object. You cannot know that. So you look from both sides. Sometimes look at the object and see that there is an object. And this is awareness. And because of the object, there is awareness. Because of awareness, you can tell that there is an object. So you are aware of the awareness too. And what? How does this object, the color, affect your mind? When you see something beautiful, it attracts your awareness. It attracts your consciousness. You want to see more. You don't want to turn away. You want to be with that object, sensation. So you know that, these images, these rupas, they attract the consciousness. So you turn your mind to the objects. In Abhidharma, the word is called Manasikara. There is mental factor which turns your mind, gives you a direction. So you know that because of the object, the mind turns to the object. When you can't see something clearly, you try to say, there's something there. What is that that is making you look like this? Attraction of the object. And the mind, is consciousness, is attracted toward the object. So you know that this object has some power and it attracts your consciousness. So whatever happens in the whole process, try to be in touch with it. And so try to do it again. Close your eyes. There's no awareness of the objects out there. You open your eyes. If you do that a few times, very mindfully, you find that as soon as you open your eyes, something happens in your mind. Immediately the awareness appears. You experience the immediate appearance of the awareness. So we are doing it so... We are in the habit of doing it so long that we don't really know that. So, when I do that, I sit in a chair, nice chair, looking outside. It's just forest and a hill. So I'm keeping my eyes open. I'm trying to get in touch with this awareness of seeing. Awareness of seeing. Aware of the object, aware of the colors. When I close my eyes, it disappears. The object disappears and the awareness disappears. We tend to believe that although we close our eyes, there is somebody inside who was aware of it and who is still there. We give this continuity. So when we do that very mindfully, we close our eyes, object disappears and the consciousness disappears. There's another consciousness arriving there. Another one. It's a new one. Like I told you last week, everything happening in this world is always new. All the conditions, phenomena, are always new. Nothing is old. So always new means always arising and passing away. Because if it doesn't pass away, it cannot be new. It has to be old. If something stays for a long time, it becomes old. So to say that something is always new means that it arises and passes away immediately. If it stays for 2 seconds, it is old. So if you narrow that time limit, you will find that to be new means to pass away. To arise and to pass away. So when I look at this, like this, and I can get in touch with awareness, not trying to focus on anything, but I'm aware of the object, but I'm more aware of the consciousness, which is aware of that. And I close my eyes, it disappears. So, What happens when I keep my eyes open? The consciousness is always there. It is not always there. It is rising and passing away so quickly that we think that it is always there because it's the same type of consciousness. Type is the same, we have the feeling that it's the same. It is not the same, but the type is the same. This, the two things very different. So after you practice it for a long time, then you come to experience this. This awareness itself is rising and passing away. It has a gap between. So for a beginner, it is not easy to do. After you practice meditation for a long time, many days, then you experience that. There's a gap, always there. And when we see things like this, it appears very solid. But when you become more and more mindful, you don't experience solidity anymore. Everything becomes shaky and moving. Because of our retina also, it is always on and off going like that. Sometimes you become aware of something happening inside your eyes. And it is like watching a television tube, dots rising and passing away. You come to feel that, you become more and more aware of that. And some people, when they get to that stage, they complain that there's something wrong with my eye, I can't see anything clearly, I can't focus my eye. So if that should happen to you, just remind yourself that this is natural to happen. So when we become more and more mindful, things that we don't normally feel becomes very obvious. So the same thing with hearing. So when we sit and meditate, we should learn to meditate with open eyes too. But for a beginner, it's better to close the eyes. Because Buddha taught meditation of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and feeling on the body, and thought also, all six. Nothing left. So train yourself to be mindful of all these six senses. But for a beginner, it's good to keep the eyes closed. And you sit, but you can't switch off your ear. So you hear sounds. In the beginning, you interpret the sound. This is a car, this is a truck, this is a man talking, this is somebody walking there. You interpret that. So whenever you interpret, you react. You don't like that. Somebody walking, somebody talking so loud. Oh, it's so noisy here. So many cars going on the road. What shall I do now? All sort of thoughts coming in your mind. So just be aware of thoughts coming in your mind and see that you are interpreting and commenting. So when you become more and more mindful of the reaction, of the interpretation of your mind, it will become less and less. So after a while, the moment you start to interpret and react, you are aware of that and it stops. And after doing that for a few times, you stop reacting. For a while, you hear something, but you don't interpret. And if you don't interpret for a long, long time, something strange happens again. It seems like you're not experiencing anything very well. Your experience is not very strong anymore. Because of our thought, we experience something more intensely. So when we stop thinking and just become aware of it, we don't really feel anything anymore. What I mean to say is that things don't have intensity anymore. If you don't react, it has no intensity. Even with the pain, you have pain in your knee, you're sitting meditating, there's pain in your knee. The more you react, the sharper it becomes. When you stop thinking about it and just feel in touch with it, not do anything, not try to overcome, not to interpret, just be with the pain. After a while you feel that the pain becomes vague. It's not as painful as before. So our thinking process makes the sensations stronger. We feel stronger. We feel the sensation most strongly. So when you stop thinking and just become in touch with it, it becomes so vague that sometimes you feel that something's missing. We want to take hold on to something. For example, say, if you had a big round ball, can you hold the ball with one hand? You cannot. Big round furry ball. You touch it and you can't hold on it. But if you put a handle on it, something round, handle on it, you can grab the handle. You can take that with the handle. So the name, the tag, the interpretation is just like the handle. With the handle, we grasp things very strongly. We won't let it go. But without that handle, everything is slippery. You can't hold on to it. So when you stop thinking and just become in touch with it, you can't grasp anything anymore. It becomes slippery and vague. And that is the way it should be, actually. So stop interpreting the sound, become in touch with it, then you know that because of that sound, there is hearing going on. There is hearing. And where does hearing happen? In the beginning, you feel that hearing happens in your ear. You can even feel the sound waves hitting your ear. You can really feel it. When you become very, very sensitive, you can even feel the sound waves on your body skin, not only on your ear. You can even feel it on your body. It comes and touches your skin. You become very sensitive to sound. And after a while, sometimes it's very painful too. So, one of my friends, who is a good meditator and who is also a doctor, because I think doctors, they work so hard, they get into this habit of working hard. To become a doctor, you work very hard. So when they meditate, you work very hard too. So one of my friends said, when I meditate, at first I thought there's a sound out there. He lives in a very crowded area with very heavy traffic, just like this, in a corner also. So he said, so much noise going on. At first I thought, oh, there's noise there. There's a sound happening there. And it's coming to me. And he feels on the ear. So at first he thought, the sound is out there. And then later he thought, the sound is here. It is happening here, in the ear. And then after a while later, he noticed that the sound is happening in the mind. You can feel it in the mind. Your consciousness of the sound and the sound, the object itself, they touch each other. You feel the impact. The object and the consciousness touching each other. You can feel it. So try to do that. Be very mindful of the noise, any kind of sound. Don't think about it. In the beginning, you feel that there's a sound out there. After a while, you feel that there's sound happening in my ear. After a while, you feel that it's in my mind. Without mind, you cannot experience anything at all. Because of this awareness arising, you feel, you experience sound. So try to experience the whole process. And in that process, you might react with liking or disliking. And be aware of that. I like this sound. I don't like this sound. So whenever you react like that, be aware of that. Oh, this is nice to hear. Oh, this is so terrible. It's painful to hear this sound. So normally, our eyes don't experience pleasant or unpleasant sensation. The eyes experience only neutral sensation. But when we see that, we interpret, and then when we like it, we feel happy. When we don't like it, we feel unhappy. That is not eye consciousness. That is mind consciousness, so to speak. Mano unyana. So when we don't interpret that way, when we stop where the eye consciousness stops, then we don't experience any pleasure or displeasure. Everything becomes neutral. So when we see something, there's nothing pleasant or unpleasant. only the interpretation makes it pleasant or unpleasant. But when we see something very bright, like welding, if you see something like that, it's very painful to the eyes. So isn't that a rupa, an eye object, which is painful? The question arises. Actually, it's not the retina which is interpreting the pain. It is another part of our body, which is kaya unyana, kaya prasada, which feels the pain. The same thing with the ear too. The sota prasada is aware only of the sound, not the pain. But the part, but they are all together in the same place. They are all homogeneously mixed. So that part of our ear which feels pain is actually kaya prasada. So try to understand this teaching very clearly, because this is the class for commentary. I want to give detailed explanation. But when you meditate, you don't need to think about these things. Only now you try to understand what happens. When you meditate, you don't think and try to understand anymore. You just get in touch with it directly. So the same thing with your nose. We get smell, you sit and meditate, sometimes you get this instant burning, because mostly in the meditation hall it burns. You get the smell, it's sweet smell. Some people like it, some people don't like it. So you get a smell, and then your mind think about it. Oh, this is sweet, good. And sometimes when you don't like it, you say, these people, they like these terrible smells, smoky. Why do they burn these things? It's not good for your lungs. You start thinking. So when you start thinking like that, be aware of that thought. Liking and not liking is our interpretation. We are conditioned to like something. We are conditioned to not to like something. So it's our conditioning. So if you feel that it is not really good for your lungs, some people are allergic to smell, then you can go away and sit in some other place. But the important thing is not to react too much, not to think, not to interpret. So when you get a smell, you are just aware of it. Because of this smell, there's this consciousness. Because of this part of your body which is sensitive to smell, this consciousness arises. So object and sense base and consciousness. So you can be aware of these three, all these three, in your meditation. But don't try to think of these three different things. Either of these three, you can be aware of it, and it's okay. If you're aware of one, it's enough. Don't try to see all different different things. For some people, they see one aspect of it. For another person, he or she will see another aspect of it. But it's the same process. So as long as they're the same process, if you're aware of one aspect of it, that's enough. If you try too much, you get agitated. You start thinking about it. So the same thing with your body. You feel something on your body, be in touch with it without interpreting it. So normally when we sit in meditation, we don't taste anything, any distinct taste in our mouth. Sometimes we feel sour in our mouth, but it's not very obvious. So it's not really important. But when we eat, it is important. When we eat something, we put food in our mouth and it tastes good, we like it. And when it tastes not good, we don't like it. So there's reaction going on again. We get the smell of the food also, we like it, we don't like it. So normally when we sit in meditation hall, there's no eating. So we don't need to do that. We feel something on the body all the time. So for example, when we breathe in and out, that's a kind of feeling sensation. Very gently, the air rushes into your nostril and it rushes out of the nostril also. There's some sort of sensation going on there. So we come in touch with the sensation. without thinking about it. It might be long, it might be short. The main object is to be aware of the whole. You need something to support you, a walking stick or even a rope. You tie a long rope for some people who are disabled for some injury when they do something to rehabilitate, to learn to walk again. You need to hold on to something so that they will not fall down, they will not go off the way. So you hold on the rope and then you walk slowly like that. But after you've learned to walk and you don't need the rope anymore, let go. Because if you keep doing that, what happens? What happens if you keep holding on to the rope? Yes, you become dependent on that and then it becomes a hindrance. So let's say you're walking and you're using your walking stick. So each step you take, you put down your walking stick. And then you take another step to put down your walking stick again. And if you are very weak and you walk very slow, it is very useful and helpful. But when you learn to run and you try to do that, take one step and put down the stick and take another step and put down the stick, can you do that? If you try to do that, you have to slow down. So you just put the walking stick away. It was useful, but now it is not necessary. So you need to be very skillful in the way you practice. So for a beginner, it is useful breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out. It's very useful because your mind is so scattered, agitated, that just to keep your mind on one breath is difficult. So you use the word to keep bringing your mind back again and again on breathing. But after you've learned to stay with the breath, let go of this long breathing in, just use in, out. After a while, let go of that even. No need to say anything anymore. So for a beginner, there are many, many ways of developing some concentration and awareness. Just like I told you before, even in one breath, you say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, up to 10. You try to do that. As you breathe in, you count in your mind the minimum 5 or the maximum 10. Why do you do that? You want to keep your mind on that again and again. You're putting your mind on breathing again and again. Because if you don't do that, 1 second you are aware of it, another second you are away. You're thinking of something else. So in order not to go out, not to think of something else, you try to count breath. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe 6, maybe 7, 8, 9, 10. So it is useful for a beginner. After a while, you don't need to count, you don't need to name, you don't need to do anything anymore. Just be with the breath. And as you are meditating like that, you feel sensation in your body. Sometimes you feel hot, sometimes you feel cold, sometimes there's a tingling sensation, sometimes sharp pain, sometimes dull pain. When the sensation becomes very, very strong, naturally your mind goes to the sensation. You can't stop it from going there. So when it goes there, be with it, no problem. Because vipassana can change objects. As long as you are with the object, as long as you don't think, it is okay. That's why vipassana concentration is called Kanika Samadhi. Kanika Samadhi, we translate that as momentary concentration. So, momentary concentration means the object changes, but the concentration is still there. One object lasts for a few moments, and you are with that object. And it disappears, and your mind is on another object, which lasts for a few moments, for a moment actually, and you are with that too. So momentary concentration doesn't mean that you are aware of it only, your concentration is only for a moment. It means that your concentration is moment, 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 moment. It goes on like that. So for example, let's say, if I hit like this. Every time I hit, you hear it. One moment. Another hitting, another hearing. Another hitting, another hearing. Moment, 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 moment. It goes on like that. Without any break in between. Without any break means without getting distracted. So that is Kanika Samadhi. So when any kind of very strong and obvious sensation happens, whether it's a sound, whether it's a pain, be with it, no problem. So when you meditate, whatever happening right now is the object of our meditation. Not what happened before, not what will happen. So this here is a very good example. In a rainy day, cloudy, and there is thunder, and grumbling thunder all the time, if you go out and look at the sky, once in a while you see a flash. And it lasts for a few seconds and disappears. So you cannot tell what shape it will be. When it happens, you are aware of it. When it's not there anymore. You don't have to think about it anymore. So be ready, be present. An object will come and you are aware of it. One or another. These are explanations on not to go back to the past, not to go ahead and think of the future, not to expect anything, not to expect what will happen next, not to try to create experience, not to make your meditation experience better, but to be with whatever is happening completely, completely. That is the the most important aspect of meditation, to be with whatever is. And here, when walking, so in a retreat or in at home, and I do that in the hallway also inside the place, I walk, because we cannot sit. Our body needs to move, need some exercise. Change of posture is very important. Because Buddha said, when you keep your body in one position for too long, I don't know how long is too long, it depends on different people, different length of time. So if you keep your body for too long, it becomes painful. When the pain becomes very painful, unbearable, the mind gets agitated. When the mind gets agitated, there's no calmness or peacefulness. There's no samadhi anymore. And with no samadhi, no insight. No insight, no liberation. Which means that when you become, the pain becomes unbearable, you don't have to be with that pain. You can change your posture. But when you change your posture, you must do it very mindfully. From sitting, you want to move a little bit. You can do that. But slowly move, and then as you move, you can see the pain getting less and less, less and less. Feel the pain getting less and less. Don't change your posture immediately without being aware of the slowly changing lessening of the pain. Because if you do that, there's a gap you are not aware of. You are not mindful. So when there's pain in your limbs, your mind doesn't like it. You want to get rid of it. This is the habit, and actually this is useful too. Because if you don't do something about it, you might hurt yourself. For example, let's say when you pick up something very hot, you immediately let go of that. Because if you don't do that, it will burn you. This is a kind of survival reaction that we have learned. But from sitting and meditating, we know that there's no real danger. There's pain, so as long as you can live, you can be with the pain, try to endure the pain and see how your mind reacts. This is a very important learning process actually. So Buddha said, ātūrakāya samesato chetam anātūram bhavisati. Very deep and profound teaching. Although my body is in pain, my mind will not be in pain. This is something you should practice. Because we cannot really get rid of all the pain in our body. As you grow older and older, you know that you begin to live with pain. Some people have arthritis. There's no way you can run away. If you take too much medicine, it will destroy your liver, your kidney, your digestive system, and many other things it can do. But if you have to take the medicine, it's okay. I won't tell you not to take medicine. But for normal pain, it is not going to hurt you very much. So try to be with the pain and see how the mind reacts. In some cases, we try to move, not because the pain is unbearable. We move because we are restless. We move because we are in the habit of not being in touch with the pain, and not learning to be with the pain. So when you feel pain, without thinking of pain, without even using the word pain. So in the beginning you can say pain, pain, pain. But I've noticed that if you use the word pain, it becomes more painful. Because you're interpreting it as pain, as something you don't like. Your mind automatically reacts to the word pain. So if you stop using the word pain and just get into the pain, be with the pain, you'll find that it's very interesting. Your mind can stay there for a long time. So some of my friends who are very scared of pain, they don't want to meditate because they think that it will be very painful. But slowly and slowly they learn to meditate, and after a while they come in touch with the pain, and they can stay with the pain, and they found out that it's very interesting. They become very calm, they get absorbed in the pain. So if you are willing to be with the pain, it is not so unbearable. If you are unwilling, then it becomes more and more unbearable. So it's the way your mind looks at the experience, which makes the experience get worse or get less. So whenever you feel pain, be with it. It won't kill you actually. And when you find that this is my limit, really honestly, I can't go on doing like this, sitting like this anymore, move slowly. So very slowly, just move a few millimeters and see the pain getting less. The whole thing, the whole experience, and the mind also, when the pain gets a little bit less, your mind becomes a little bit relaxed. Oh, it's nice now, feeling better now, and then move a little bit again, feeling more better now, and move again. It's now very, very good now, and then you find another posture, another position where you don't feel pain anymore. You feel happy. You feel very relaxed. And then sit and meditate again, back to breathing slowly and slowly. And then after sitting for an hour, or sometimes people sit for 2 hours even, in Burma, some people sit for 5 hours, 6 hours, and some people sit even more than that. You might not believe it, but really, some people sit for 24 hours. Really, they really sit for 24 hours, not eating, not drinking. You can do that, actually. So, when I see people, they can't even sit for 1 hour. If they want to, they can train their body. They can. But they think that nobody can do more than this. So, when you think that this is your limit, when you come to that point, your body will react too much. When you know that I can do more than this, then your body doesn't react. Your mind doesn't react. You can learn to stretch to your limit slowly and slowly, slowly and slowly. And after you can sit for 3 hours, then you find that meditation gets very deep. It becomes more and more clear. Stop thinking, you get deeper and deeper and deeper in touch with the reality, and you can see very fine, subtle things happening. So that's why it is important to learn to sit longer. And also standing meditation, people do standing meditation too. I don't see people standing here. I see people sitting on the floor or sitting in the chair. try to meditate standing. Sometimes, at least try it for a while. But if you cannot maintain your body, if you are afraid that you will fall down, if you have something to put your hands on, a kind of rail or something, or a table, you can do that. Stand, put your hands on the table. That will keep you the balance, give you the balance, and stand and meditate. Sometimes it's very good to do that. So stand as long as you can, and then you walk. So when you walk also, do it very mindfully. Begin from the intention to walk. So you stand for a long time, and then your body really wants to change the posture. You really want to move. And that real intention is very strong. It comes woof like that. You can't stand anymore. You don't want to stand anymore. And you feel that energy. You want to move. Sometimes you feel like your body is moving. Although your feet are still there, you feel like your body is pulling. Something is pulling. You can feel that energy in the mind and in the body. So the moment your mind thinks of moving, immediately something happens in your body. In that part of the body which you decide to move. That part of the body becomes very different. All the nerves and all the muscles become immediately ready to move. And you feel the energy there. The blood and the nerve and the muscle becoming tense. And then when you become aware of that, you let go of that. Naturally, you let go of that. And you are standing there again. And then after a few seconds, that urge or that very strong desire to move comes back again. So you know that desire coming. Sometimes you feel something here, tight here, something rushing up. You feel that again. And then after a few times, you really decide to move. And then you move very slowly and see the feeling, the sensation, the tension. You feel something happening in your muscles. So get into the feeling, not the shape. So you say walking. For a beginner, it's okay. But here you are not beginners. This is a class for advanced meditators. So, but I want to go back to the beginner stage also. For a beginner, you say left, right. What is it, left, right? It's just words. You call this right and you call this left. It's just a name. And you are also aware of the shape. This long leg, it's round and long. It's moving forward, stretching, and moving again. So for a beginner, it's okay. But after a while, it's not the shape, it's not the name. It's the sensation. While you move, it's the sensation that should be the object of meditation. How do you feel in your muscles? And also the mind. How do you feel in the mind? So, when you try to do it very mindfully, you'll find that even to move your foot a little bit, you need the whole body to cooperate. Without the cooperation of the whole body and mind, you cannot move even an inch. Because, let's see, you are standing there, and you decide to move. What happens? You shift the body weight onto another leg. That leg has to cooperate to take the whole body weight. And to free, for example, let's say you are moving the right leg, to free the right leg, the left leg cooperates and takes the whole body weight and make it very tight so that you won't fall down. And then your right leg is free now, it moves a little bit. And see what happens. If you really move, even a few millimeters, you can feel it right up to your head. From your toe to your head, things change. The whole body on your left leg also, from the toe to the head, everything changes. You can feel the whole thing happening. Energy, so much energy. It's not simple to move. It's a very complex process going on. So get interested. You are not in a hurry to do anything. What you are doing is to see what is happening in your body when you take one step. Just do it with deep interest. What is happening now? If you do that, you can get very interested and Because of the interest, your mind becomes calm down and get absorbed. And because of that absorption also, and because of this samadhi, you feel more energy and sometimes some kind of joy. This joy is very close to interest. If you have no interest, you have no joy. So one translation, one meaning of piti is interest. Piti means interest, piti means jest, or piti means joy altogether. So get very, very interested. What happens if I try to move? You are not moving, but you are just trying to move it. What happens to your whole body and mind? So if you do that, you walk from this place to that end of the hall. If you do that very slowly, you can get very absorbed. The samadhi can become very strong. So some people say that walking meditation is not good because you don't develop samadhi. Maybe that person doesn't really try to walk with deep interest. If you do that with deep interest, you develop very strong samadhi. And Buddha said that the samadhi that you develop from practicing walking meditation is much stronger than the samadhi you develop while you are sitting. Very important to know, because in the moving process, if you can stay with that, your awareness is stronger. So you will change postures, you will hear, you will see, you will feel many things. Try to be in touch with the whole process as much as you can, without thinking about it. So in that process, you will find that there is the intention, the decision, the desire, the wanting arriving in your mind. There is a wanting to move, wanting to see, wanting to listen. Or wanting to drink. Sometimes you are sitting and meditating, you feel so thirsty. You want to drink. And that desire is very strong. You feel the desire. Sometimes you see even the cup of water, a glass of water. So nice it would be to drink a glass of water. Sometimes you are sitting and you have something itchy going on somewhere in your body. Itchy. You want to scratch. So before you go to scratch, you can see the desire, the wanting to scratch. And then before you move your hand, once you decide to move your hand, you feel very different. Something going on here. The energy in the hand has changed immediately. Feel that energy. Something happens there. Something is happening there. And then in your image also, in your mind image, you see your hand going like this. But your real hand is still there. But in your mind, you see the image of your hand going to scratch. So you become aware of that. And actually, you move slowly, scratch, and slowly put back your hand and go on meditating. So it's very simple. What I'm telling you now is actually very, very simple. But it's hard to do simple things. We make things more and more complicated. So to meditate is actually very, very simple. So can you do that? Are you willing to be simple? So now I think I'll give you a chance to ask questions. Next week, this week also, when I talk about this consciousness and object, it is actually Nama Rupa Parichida Jnana, the first insight. No being, no name, no shape, just sensation and awareness. You know that there's a sensation, there's an awareness. And sensation is nature, natural phenomenon, and awareness also is natural phenomenon. This consciousness is not a being. You are not creating it, it is happening because of the conditions. And when you see this, the two things very clearly, that is the first insight. So I will try to talk about four insights again and again to get the four very, very clear. I don't want to leave anything out. But after the four, the rest is quite simple. There are 10 insights, but the first four are the most important. So, awareness of object and consciousness, very clearly, seeing both as natural phenomena, not a being, not a man, not a woman, that is the first insight. Yes?
blindness. It's about struggle walking the deception and that does that person who could cross the barrier.
Talking about walking, Sankama Buddha taught about walking meditation. In that part, Buddha said that walking meditation gives you samadhi and it's very strong. Because you are moving all the time, you need to have more energy. You need to put more energy to be in touch with the process. When something is stable, it's easier to be with that and you can just relax. But when something is changing and moving, you have to put more effort, more energy into it. And once you have developed that sort of energy, effort, and developed that mindfulness, and you go and sit, it's quite simple, easy. Try to do that yourself and you'll find why. Walk in a place like this, if you have a place where you can walk 10 steps, that's quite enough for you to do walking meditation. Because each step will take quite a long time. Do it with deep interest. After you walk from this place to that place, very mindfully, and have a place to sit on that side, and go there and sit down very mindfully, and see what happens. You get more calm and more peaceful and more mindful. So I suggest that do walking meditation first, and then do sitting meditation. You will really feel the difference. So for beginners, it's very important to do both. But as you develop deeper and deeper samadhi, after a while you can sit for 2 hours and sit for one, or walk for 1 hour. And then after a while you sit for 3 hours and walk for 1 hour. Just to give your body some exercise, you can get deeper and deeper into your samadhi. So try to do that at home. In the section of Satipatthana, there's one section talking about walking meditation. And if you can find the commentary of that section, you'll get more detailed instruction there. And Buddha talked about benefits of walking also. That you'll find in Inguttara. Inguttara means gradual sayings. In the group of five. More questions? The sensitivity of the body, this body, the skin actually, also deep in the muscle you feel something. Whatever you feel on your body, you feel it because of the sensitivity of the body. Sensitivity of the eye, sensitivity of the ear, sensitivity of the nose is sensitive to smell, the tongue is sensitive to taste, the eye is sensitive to light and colors, the ear is sensitive to sound vibration, the body is sensitive to hot or cold, hard, soft, and movement, vibration, tension. So the sensitivity of the body. Yes? Sensory receptors. Oh, that's a medical word for it. Sensory receptor. Kaya prasada, sensory receptor. It's nice if you can learn these words also. It makes you very clear understanding. So before you really meditate, get very clear about what it is. But while you're meditating, you don't think about it anymore. Yes?
Think about pain, don't think about
that
pain. But
Vedana Vipassana, Vedana Vipassana. Yes, yes. Vedana Vipassana means you are aware of the pain. Not only pain, Vedana, Sukha Vedana, Dukha Vedana, and Upaka Vedana. What I'm telling you is, you are with the pain, but you are not naming it anymore. In the beginning you name it, but after a while you don't name it anymore, you are with the pain. Whether it's sukha or dukkha or upaka, you are with the pain. So being or with the pain is with an anupasana. You are doing it without naming it.
I see.
Three kinds of vedana. In the body, we feel all three. Sukha and dukkha and also upekkha, all three. But most of the time, there's some sort of slight pain in the body all the time, but we don't pay attention. So when we pay attention, then we feel it. So when there's no pain anymore, you feel very light. Sometimes in meditation, you feel so peaceful and calm and so light. All the pain is gone. There's sukha vedana. And sometimes there's upekkha vedana. It's neither pleasant nor unpleasant. But in the eye, for the sensitivity of the eye, chakku prasada, actually for that chakku prasada, the vedana is only upekkha. For sota also, it's only upekkha. For the smell also, the smell comes and goes into your nose, you don't really feel pain there. You feel only the smell, you are aware of the smell only. So there's no sukha or dukkha. But when you smell something terrible, your body and mind reacts to that. That's another process. One of my friends, he had an accident, and after that, he couldn't smell anything anymore. He had no smell anymore. So he might be walking in a place with that smell, he doesn't react. So vedana in Sinhalese means pain. So in Pali it has three types. And in the mind also, somanasa, dhammanasa and upekkha again. Three. But I noticed that there are a lot of Pali words in Sinhalese language.
Prasada means something nice.
Kaya prasada. Yes, prasada also in Pali also. And it has different meaning. One meaning is nice, pleasant. Any more questions? You feel more weight on another leg. Or this is heaviness, you mean? When you lift up, because it has weight, you know, you have to overcome the gravity, you have to overcome the resistance. You have to put some effort to lift it. You need effort. It's a kind of resistance. Well, you know, we are so used to moving that we don't really know how much effort it takes. So, to tell you one example, once, a long time ago, our friends agreed to arrange a situation where one can meditate without doing anything at all. One monk can meditate without doing anything. It means we just put out the bowl in front of the door, close the door and sit and meditate. Somebody will take away the bowl, a monk will take away the bowl, put the food and fill up all the water pots and clean the whole thing and bring back and put the bowl there. And when we feel ready to eat, we just open the door and take the bowl and eat it. Nobody will come and disturb you. So we do that for a long, long time, just sitting and meditating many, many hours, in just going out to get some exercise, walking for a few minutes only to stretch the legs and come back and sit and meditate. The eyes just dropping, relaxing. The whole body becomes so relaxed that after a while it's very difficult even to open the eyes. Even the eyelids, you open so much effort. You need so much energy to open the eyes. And when we start talking again, because we do that for many days, sometimes months. So after a while you start to talk, so much energy you need to really develop to talk. And your muscles also, your cheek muscles also become so soft that even to smile, it's so difficult to smile. So we don't really know this bhara. You know what bhara means? The burden. We are so used to it. Yes?
Is this day by day by understanding the meaning of things? The meditation is just trying to away.
Yes? Not really, actually. Not really. In the beginning, if you do that for a few months and you start thinking, you find that it's difficult to think. But it's only for a while. Because we do that again and again, off and on. When I live in a place in Jemuna, I lived there alone for at least 4 months. But when you come out of that, in the beginning it's a bit difficult. Because you don't want to think, because it's not necessary to think. But when you have to say something, you know exactly what to say without going around. You say short and to the point, very clear. Before? Yes? Mm-hmm. When you want to say something, you get in touch with what you want to say and say it very clearly. And also, before we meditate, we take these names and ideas and the association of these names and ideas very, very seriously. But after you meditate, you know that these are just interpretations. You don't take these things very seriously, but you know the meaning. You interpret in the same way, the right way, and you use it appropriately without taking things too seriously. So you use it without being imprisoned by the concepts and ideas and names. Concepts and ideas and names are prisons. They are useful though, but they are also prisons. So if we really want to free our mind, we have to learn, we have to know what they are, the limitations, how they affect us, and also go beyond words and concepts and ideas. So this is one form of reality. It's important for our survival. If we don't interpret things in the right way, we will not survive. So this is necessary for our survival. In the evolution process, we've learned to interpret things the right way. Especially in the forest, you are sitting there, you hear something. If you don't interpret it the right way, you'll be eaten up by a tiger. So when you hear a tiger, you just shut the door. If you keep it open, maybe you'll be in trouble. So to interpret things in the right way is also useful, but when you want to go beyond the ordinary reality, you need to leave all those behind. They are necessary, they are useful, but for a certain amount of time, you leave these things behind and go beyond this ordinary reality. Yes, that is true. If you can do that, it's very helpful for you to develop deep insight. But for beginners, I won't suggest doing that. Because it is better to develop gradually. So if you let a person Immediately you take somebody and tell them, go and live in that cave, in that small room, don't come out, we bring food. You just take the food and eat, and just stay there for a month. That person will go crazy. You know, we are always trying to run away from ourselves. We can't face what's inside. There are so many things inside. All sorts of memories and emotions and feelings and desires. So much inside. So if you suddenly do that, everything will explode. So gradually learn to do that. So it's not easy to be with yourself all the time. Yes, yes. We learn to do it slowly and slowly, gradually, gradually. That is true, that is true. If you have learned to live with yourself and just watch and let go, just watch and let go without reacting, you can develop very deep samadhi and very deep insight. Mm-hmm, yes. It comes naturally, actually. You don't deliberately do anything. It happens, yes. If you can do just one thing, honestly be aware of whatever is happening, without misinterpreting anything, the rest will happen. That's the beauty of the practice, actually. You know that if I'm mindful honestly, the rest will happen naturally. Whatever difficulty comes in your mind, if you can be aware of that difficulty, a question comes in your mind, oh, I don't know what to do. Just be aware of that question, don't know what to do, let go. If you can do that, your mind becomes calm again. And after a while, you know what to do. So you find out what to do without thinking, actually. Many people do the same thing. So we practice with our teacher. People come and ask him questions and questions and questions. He was very patient, very kind. And he answered every question. But after a while, many, many times he said, be more mindful, you'll find your own answer. That is really very important, because he is now passed away, who is going to answer the questions? No, my teacher. I have not met my teacher. My teacher in Burma. His real name is Venerable Dhamma Nandiya. Yes, when you become very, very mindful, your mind sometimes cannot think. Especially when you develop some sort of samadhi and insight, even though you try to divert your mind to another object, it won't go there, it comes back. Just leave it. Just stay there for a while, and then after a while you feel ready to do other things too. But if it's not ready to do that, don't force it. It's something like a kind of a hypnotic state also. When you are in hypnotic state, you shouldn't come up quickly. Take your time and slowly come out of that. A kind of absorption, actually. Well, vipassana also can get very absorbed. So when you are in that state, don't force yourself to come out quickly. Take your time. But after a few minutes, you feel ready to think about something else. Thinking is a burden.
And then when you at that stage, just to mention, when you try to come out quickly, is it sometimes you get ahead of the problem?
It could be, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So take your time, just a few minutes is enough. Just prepare your mind that you are going to come out of it. If you are very calm and peaceful, if there's no thought or agitation, it's okay to stay there. It's so nice to go away from all the words. These words are so tiring. These thinking in the mind is so tiring. It is very useful, very, very